Good morning. Some of you might wonder what cardiovascular mortality has to do with cancer. In fact, they have very similar risk factors, as most of you know, just at the behavioral level: alcohol, tobacco, overweight, and of course a wide host of environmental factors, as we heard in the first presentation, affecting cardiovascular, that is heart disease and stroke, as well as cancers. But the most prominent factor that binds cardiovascular disease to cancer and many, many other causes of morbidity and mortality is socioeconomic status. Socioeconomic status of the population is the single most pervasive factor in all of epidemiology affecting lower socioeconomic groups with higher morbidity and mortality than higher ones. So the question becomes, what happened during the major international recession, when there was a decline in national income and great increases in unemployment? What happened to these three causes of death? And in addition, when government was able to take some action, and this is a study of the United States, with welfare policies, did that have any effect on cancer mortality and heart disease and stroke? The paper investigates whether government welfare policy was instrumental in modifying the health damaging effects that we would have expected from the Great Recession on mortality due to cardiovascular disease and cancer mortality in the United States. Government welfare expenditures from federal, state, and local sources were examined as to the extent that they influenced heart disease, cancer, and stroke mortality for each United States state, over the years 2000 to 2009. So as compared to the last study, for example, this is both a cross-sectional and a time series study, so it is possible to infer temporal causality. In addition, two of the primary variables that undergo substantial change during recessions are included in the model to predict three major sources of U.S. mortality in the 21st century. Household income per capita declines, so a very central factor in socioeconomic status, and unemployment rate increases. Economic stress, especially involving clinical depression and stress coping mechanisms, are suggested by the literature to be active, as well as smoking, alcohol use, and dietary changes, concerning all of these major causes of death. Wage and salary declines, underemployment, and unemployment are also assumed to reduce the use of health care. This is again what the three causes of death have in common. They all respond to health care, and cancer most recently. As is loss of health insurance due to unemployment, this is very peculiar, of course, to the United States and to employers who, when employees are dismissed, very often lose their source of health insurance. So here's the model. A model is developed in which government welfare expenditures, as well as household income and the unemployment rate, prominent indicators of recession, are used to predict mortality due to heart disease, cancer, and stroke. Controls are used for percent of the population with government health insurance, smoking prevalence, and the percentage of the African American population, which in the cases of cardiovascular disease and cancer are considerably higher than the non-African American population. The analysis involves pooled cross-sectional time series analysis, very much in the geospatial dimension, but also taking into account time. It is called panel analysis, those of you who are familiar with the economics, and it simultaneously observes changes in many regions at the same moment and over time, in this case for the years 2000 through 2009, which was the end of the recession. Analysis of all pooled cross-sectional time series with random effects. This kind of analysis comes in two versions, as some of you may know: random effects and fixed effects. We chose random effects in order to deal with the time invariant factors. There has to be variation over time to use the fixed effects model. An example of invariant is percentage of state populations that were African American. The findings were the healthcare expenditures, and I'll show you the tables and charts in just a moment, as a percent of GDP is strongly inversely related to mortality for each of the major causes. The same is true for welfare expenditures. Household income declines and unemployment increases are prominent predictors of cardiovascular and cancer mortality. All relations are statistically significant at the 0.001 level. Policy implications are that public health policy should include a specific focus on socioeconomic status. This is true for the United States, but it is true internationally, especially where this involves major causes of death. Such policy would include an emphasis on improving the economic status of low and lower middle-income populations and a more robust and comprehensive enlargement of the social safety net. This is particularly a problem in the United States. Here's what the model looks like. The red rows are the variables. The one at the very top, as you see, is the five-year lag of GDP per capita. That means national income and wealth per capita in thousands. The beta on the adjusted standardized beta on the far left shows that it is the single strongest factor affecting, in this case, heart disease mortality. Secondly, the proportion of social welfare expenditures. This has a Z of negative 6.94, significant again at the 0.001 level. The population coverment by health insurance, a very important variable as well, significant at the same levels. Government spending on education, an enormously important variable, as we've seen in many cases of socioeconomic status. Percentively of the less than high school population, so percent of the population that does not have a high school level of education, next to the single most important factor for the United States in heart disease, 1 year lag of the unemployment rate, so it takes the unemployment rate about a year or two to manifest itself, as we shall see in heart, cancer, and stroke mortality. The prevalence of the black or African-American population, and the five-year lag of prevalence of daily smokers in the population. So this is for the total population. This is what the graph looks like. It is a correlation adjusted in the neighborhood of 0.7. What you're looking at in the horizontal curve is what is predicted by the model you just saw, and it is matched in that regression against the observed heart disease mortality rate by state in the United States. Look at the same model for the male population. Very similar to the total population, nearly identical findings, since this particular study concentrates on welfare expenditures. Look at the second row with your Z level at negative 6.10, again significant at the 0.001 level, as is true for nearly all of these variables. That's what the prediction looks like for males. For females, a very, very similar picture, remarkably. Not as many studies comparing directly men and women in heart, cancer, and stroke, because it seems their manifestations are so different, histories are different, and so forth, but where it comes to the aggregate, the sexes are very similar in heart, cancer, and stroke, despite enormous differences in the typologies of cancer between the two sexes. What is ruling this, what is demonstrating its extraordinary power across the straits in time, is socioeconomic status, put in the form of GDP, welfare expenditures, and the unemployment rate. Picture for the females, very similar. Very unusually tight fit as we see often in microbiological studies, but rarely at the aggregate level. This is total malignant neoplasms. Again, the model is similar but slightly weaker in its overall construction because government spending on education, as you see, is not significant. The Z is below 2.0. Very strong relations for GDP per capita and for social welfare, and proportion of the population covered by government health insurance. This is telling us that government health insurance, just the health insurance, never mind the treatment, is an important source of survival in cancer. The prediction here for the overall model is even tighter than for heart disease, which is something we did not expect. The situation for males, again, government spending on education is not significant, but the rest of the model looks very similar to the total, and the proportion of social welfare expenditures continues to have the same strong effect. Once again, if we look at the betas, the adjusted betas in the left-hand column, it is the strongest variable for the GDP, the national income and wealth, and is even stronger than for smoking or for the African-American population. That's the relationship for the males. Now the relationship for the females. Here again, the relations are very similar, except that the black or African-American population do not show significance in this case, possibly because of the issue of breast cancer, which is heavily tilted toward the Caucasian female population. And again, government spending on health on education itself is not significant. Well, it's significant at the 10% level, which is a bit of a question. But here again, proportion of the population covered by social welfare expenditures continues to beneficially influence mortality reduction for cancer in women. And this is the prediction graph. The last one is stroke. This is the age standardized cerebrovascular diseases mortality rate for both sexes. Again, spending on education is not significant, but the proportion of less than high school educated people is highly significant, with a Z level, as you see, of 5.82, which is very similar to what we see in social welfare expenditures, highly protective in stroke. But again, the super duper variable, as we see in all of these types of models, is the GDP. If national income and wealth increase, that is the best source, the most effective source of decreasing heart cancer and stroke mortality, at least in the United States, and is by far and away, as you can see with the beta, the most powerful variable in the group. The estimating picture for total stroke, whoops, it's a little delicate equipment we have here. Now the situation for males. Oh, I'm sorry, these are females. In the male case is, again, the government spending on education, which is not quite as strong, at least in significance level, as we see with the rest of them, but the entire pattern for men replicates more or less we saw in the previous slide, with the principal variable for our discussion today being social welfare expenditures. Why social welfare expenditures? Because it's such an active policy phenomenon. And the APHA theme, of course, is health and all policies. Here we have policies actually bearing on the income and employment of members of our population, which have active and nearly immediate effects on survival in heart cancer and stroke. And the female model, very similar, except again, as in the case of female malignancies, the African-American population is not at particularly high risk in this case. all of the other variables behave as they do for males and for the total. Here, the result for social welfare expenditures is very, very strong, with a z-statistic of negative 5.22, a coefficient of negative 0.65, and it is the third most important factor in the model for women. And that is what the picture looks like. Conclusion. As we see at the micro level, the individual level, not the micro level for DNA, that's a little smaller than we deal with at the population level, but at the national level and at the state and regional level, as well as at the individual level in epidemiology, our socioeconomic variables continue to be the most powerful ones that influence heart, cancer, stroke, diabetes, and virtually all other significant causes of death, from infant mortality to accidents. In our field of public health, we tend to pay very little attention to the kinds of policies that are active there, because often in our profession, we tend to concentrate on health care, which is perfectly reasonable and should be done, but to omit reference to some of the major policies, since we're dealing with health for all policies here, such as education, occupation, occupational stress, and most particularly income, misses a lot of what is going on in our normal epidemiology. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? We will be able to take only two. Yes.
I'd like to commend you on your study. It's very interesting, and obviously put a lot of work into it. What I'm struck with is it's a very complex design, and rightfully so, given the complexity of the factors that you have there. So I'm just, and you can follow up, because I'm very interested in your model, and there's a lot of technical decisions that you made that I really wouldn't have time to discuss. But essentially, these are 10 years and 50 states, and these are characteristics of each of those states for each of those years. And so when you think that this period, so that we capture the decline of the economy during that period, and so different states would be responding in different ways, and the welfare appropriations within different states and so on, they also might have been. So there's private sector activity that crashes, and then there's public sector activity that lags but also crashes, and then you also see then the people within these states, their mortality rates start to. Now, is there an upper or lower amount of mortality that you would associate with these, if we were to think of causality? What percentage of change in mortality would you attribute to these factors?
Okay. Excellent question. Thank you very much. Maybe next time you should do the presentation. I thank you for your excellent understanding of this. Yes, the peculiarity of the methodology, and it is peculiar for epidemiologists, but is becoming more frequent. We do see this now in economic journals, political science journals, and in some health affairs, for instance. We see this from time to time. The combinations of time and space simultaneously. It was invented by two economists at the University of Chicago, one of whom won a Nobel Prize for it. And it is referred to generically as panel analysis. Right, okay. The way you described it is quite accurate, but your end question was, well, what exactly is the effect, or how much can we attribute in terms of change? Under normal circumstances, an increase of 1% of the GDP elevates life expectancy by about 1%. Under normal circumstances, an increase of the unemployment rate of, let's say, 1% will cause a decline, other things equal, will cause an increase in the mortality rate for these three causes of death and for all death combined of about 1%. So this is a derivative of these kinds of models.
Thank you so much. Maybe one observation. What I find quite interesting is the almost immediate effect.
Yeah.
One would maybe think of, well, there is a change in GDP or other factors. You might see a change in 20 years. How you account for that?
Yeah, an excellent question. Why do the effects look so immediate? Well, that's only part of the effect. Those of you who study socioeconomic status and study changes in employment patterns and unemployment and changes in income and wealth know that the effects are very long-lasting. So, for example, much of the importance of national income and wealth is that it enables us to invest in health care. It enables us to invest in education. It enables us to invest in pensions and all of the accoutrements of life that the society gains in long-term investment. So there are long-term effects, and we can measure them. We don't measure them in this paper, but they run in a minimum of 10 years, and some economists say about 20 years. In the case of unemployment, work that my team has done over the last 15, 20 years has shown that the most important lag is between 2 and 3 years for most countries in the world. Not as quick as we see here, but there's something very special about the Great Recession. So many people were affected, people who were not particularly at risk had they been especially poor, that the effect seemed to be very sudden. We can see them at 0 years, 1 year, and for very long periods of time as well. Again, economists at the Chicago, believe it or not, Federal Reserve Bank, have estimated some of these effects, and again, about 20 to 25 years.
Thank you. Let's close it here, so we have time for the other presenters. Thank you so much.